progress in a 30-year fight over how to fund your child's education. With billions of dollars on the line, who's weighing in today? And it's unanimous. Commissioners make discrimination against LGBTQ people illegal in Wake County. Plus, wrongly convicted and incarcerated.
They use the death penalty as this tool against me.
WREL investigates a man's decade-long fight for compensation for 13 years he's been in prison for a crime he says he didn't commit.
The five counties at the beginning of the legal fight over funding public schools in North Carolina will now get a say in how that fight ends. Thank you for joining us. I'm David Crabtree.
And I'm Deborah Morgan. In 1994, these five counties across the state, all of them in our area, said they need more money to provide the same level of education as larger, wealthier counties. It became known as the Leandro case. Well, today the judge in those counties and gave those today the judge in charge of that gave those systems 2 weeks to tell him how lawmakers should comply with the order to spend billions of dollars over the coming years. WREL has tracked this case since the initial lawsuit was filed nearly 30 years ago. WREL's Keeley Arthur is live now with the impact of today's decision. Keeley?
Deborah, I think it's safe to call this a controversial decision. A judge spoke earlier today here at Wake County Superior Court telling the state legislature that they must adopt this plan to increase school funding. But many Republican lawmakers say that they are in control of this budget and this judge is out of bounds.
The case is about children.
And it has been for nearly three decades. Melanie Dubas represents the very same five school districts that sued in Leandro versus the state, arguing that schools in low-wealth rural counties like Hoke County weren't getting the same education as students in wealthier counties.
Counties fund facilities, but the state, by law, is required to fund school operations. And they felt that these rural counties could not afford to fund the education they thought their students deserved, that they thought was adequate.
While a judge sided with the schools, not much has actually changed.
It's been a really big deal for them because they still struggle to raise a lot of money.
In 2004, the North Carolina Supreme Court ordered the state comply with the ruling and fund schools, but so far that has not happened.
There was never a specific comprehensive plan submitted to the court.
Recently, a consulting firm was hired to develop one. Earlier this year, Judge David Lee agreed to adopt their recommendation of increasing funding by $5.8 billion over the next 8 years. But actually getting the money is the tricky part. The state legislature controls that, and it is controlled by Republicans who are against it. With State Senator Philip Berger writing, quote, "This is yet another example of why the founders were right to place power to create law and spend money with the legislature, not an unaccountable and unelected trial judge." Now, Judge Lee and Dubas will meet back here at the Wake County Superior Court coming up on November 1st. The state will then have a week to respond to their demands. It should be pretty interesting to see what happens come November. Deborah?
It certainly will. Keeley Arthur live in Raleigh. Thank you, Keeley. Learn more about this case on WREL.com. You can watch a recent interview with Judge Howard Manning. He's the judge who oversaw the case before he retired. That's all linked to this story in the education page of WREL.com.
Hello, I'm Mark Boyle in the WREL Live Center tonight. Right now, the Alamance County Sheriff's investigators are trying to determine how a woman's body got in the back of a car. Here's what happened. Durham over here on the map, all the way west in Alamance County off of Harmony Church Road. The woman's body found burned to death in the back of a burned out vehicle this afternoon. That investigation is still in the early stages, but right now they're still working to identify that woman. Back to you.
Mark, thank you. One of the longest serving members of Congress is retiring at the end of his current term. Democrat David Price has served in the 4th District for almost 30 years. He is a progressive and better known for the fine points of creating legislation than seeking headlines.
Being an institutional patriot doesn't just mean uncritical love for the institution. It means actually criticism and reform and trying to make things better. And so I do believe we need to appreciate in this country the importance of our institutions. The Trump era has underscored that in very dramatic ways.
And he's not finished yet. Coming up on our news tonight at 7 o'clock, Congressman Price talks about what he wants to accomplish in his remaining 15 months and how he views the future of American democracy.
A community has gathered to mourn the deaths of five Raleigh teenagers in a car crash. You are looking at the live memorial service going on right now. They have balloons because they're going to be releasing those. This is all happening right now at Spring Forest Park in North Raleigh. Police say their SUV was speeding about 80 miles an hour when they ran off the road on Capitol Boulevard and hit the Fairview Road Bridge. One young man inside was 13, two were 14, and two were 17 years old. None was wearing a seatbelt. WREL's Aaron Thomas is working to learn more about these teenagers and will bring you their story coming up on our news at 7. In Robeson County, investigators spent the day outside of Pembroke looking for 42-year-old Jessica Lawrence. She's been missing since September 26. The sheriff says a tip led them to a spot near Highway 710 and Hubbard Road where they found some of the missing woman's belongings. Her boyfriend is considered a person of interest and was caught last week driving Lawrence's vehicle. Michael Brayboy is being held on a $1.5 million bond on an unrelated charge.
Discrimination against those who are LGBTQ will become illegal in Wake County. Commissioners approved a non-discrimination ordinance strengthening protection in employment, public spaces, and small businesses. WREL's Matt Tallhelm is live outside the Wake County Justice Center with what this means for the community. Matt.
David, this is something local governments couldn't do just a year ago. That's because of the infamous HB2, the bathroom bill, and the law that replaced it prevented local governments from passing these kind of non-discrimination ordinances. Well, tonight, advocates for equality are celebrating that vote that happened inside this building.
Because I feel like, you know, things are changing and that people have the capacity to do so.
Celeste Jones is confident enough now to stand up to the discrimination she says she experienced in the workplace as a Black transgender woman.
People like me have to suffer in silence. And that's the thing that I'm really happy about here, because we don't have to do that anymore. We can actually advocate for ourselves and speak up.
She and other LGBTQ people are protected under the non-discrimination ordinance unanimously approved by Wake County's Board of Commissioners. It bans discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression.
We are ready for more concrete protections and to truly send the message that y'all means all really does mean all.
The ordinance spells out enforcement of alleged violations. A person can file a complaint to the county manager's office within 90 days. The county attorney will investigate. They can try to resolve the issue out of court. If not, a court could issue an injunction.
Unfortunately, some people will only do the right thing when it's the law of the land.
The North Carolina Family Policy Council opposes these kinds of ordinances. In a statement to WRAL, the council's president says they are often weaponized to attack and punish small business people who are simply seeking to live their lives and conduct their businesses in accordance with their sincerely held religious beliefs.
It's really about not being mean-spirited toward others. It's really about making sure that we treat everyone with kindness and inclusion.
That's a message now becoming law that brings tears to Jones's eyes.
I don't want anything more than the next person. I just want to be able to live a fruitful and successful life.
The ordinance expands these protections also against discrimination, including based on military service, religious beliefs, age and sex and race. It only covers unincorporated parts of Wake County. So that's an important part here, because not all the towns have adopted that. Apex has done that. It won't go into effect also until February 1st, 2022. That's to give businesses in the county some time to understand exactly what it means for them, David.
Matt Tallhelm reporting live in Raleigh. Matt, thank you. A dozen other city and county governments in the state, seen here in green, have passed a non-discrimination ordinance. Raleigh leaders will vote at tomorrow's council meeting. Mecklenburg County's ordinance is ready for a second and final vote.
A new triangle program is designed to bring more minority men to the classroom. NC Central launched the Marathon Teaching Institute this fall. It provides mentors and support for minority men who want to become teachers or counselors. A recent U.S. Department of Education Education report says black men make up about 2% of America's educators. Well, parents, listen up. This is the week to make sure your high school seniors finish those college applications. That because more than 40 North Carolina colleges and universities have waived their application fees this week. All 58 state community colleges are also participating. NC Countdown to College is sponsoring the event. Free College Application Week ends this Friday. Still ahead, why a national announcement about forever chemicals and environmental safety happened here in Raleigh. Plus,
there was no DNA that convicted me at all. Man, I never went to trial. It's like they swept it under the rug.
WRAL investigates a man's decade-long fight to clear his name and receive compensation for 13 years he spent in prison for a crime he says he didn't commit. Mike?
Deb, below normal temperatures yesterday, below normal temperatures again today in blue, but those temperatures are set to rise. I'll show you why, and we're tracking two fronts and the impacts we could see from them. It's coming up.
He was convicted of a heinous crime involving a child, yet always maintained his innocence. Now, Derek Allen is free after his conviction was overturned. WRAL Investigates' Cullen Browder found Allen feels the system that wrongfully convicted him is keeping him from receiving compensation for more than a decade he spent in prison. It's a story you'll see only on WRAL.
Did you rape and murder that child?
No.
For more than 20 years, Derek Allen has maintained he didn't rape and murder a young girl back in 1998.
It was better to go to prison, take this plea, and fight and get back in court. And go for it.
Threatened with the possibility of execution, Allen submitted to an Alford plea, which the court treats as a guilty plea, but allows Allen to maintain his innocence.
He used the death penalty as this tool against me.
He spent nearly 13 years in prison. In 2009, a judge vacated Allen's plea. A year later, the charges were dismissed after an auditor of the state crime lab raised concerns about blood test results in Allen's case. In 2012, the Court of Appeals overturned the judge's order. Allen waited 4 more years until the district attorney decided not to retry the case.
I was ready to go to trial. I'm still ready to go to trial. And they won't take him.
While Allen is free, he's still fighting to clear his name.
I want my life back. I want for them to know that I'm actually innocent.
He feels he was wrongly incarcerated and wants compensation for the time he spent in prison. Greg Taylor was also convicted with the help of bad blood testing in the crime lab. He was deemed innocent of murder by the state's Innocence Inquiry Commission and received $750,000 compensation.
The judge, my defense counsel, and the DA could have done their jobs and got me before the Innocence Inquiry Commission.
However, Allen's case is no longer eligible for an innocence hearing. WRAL Investigates was given 3 reasons. 1, he doesn't have an active conviction for rape and murder. 2, he doesn't have new evidence to prove his innocence. The crime lab audit doesn't count since a judge already considered that when setting Allen free. And finally, he's not actively incarcerated for those crimes.
But it bothers me that he won't grant me or give me the pardon so that I can move forward with my life.
His only hope now is a pardon of innocence from the governor, something Roy Cooper has only granted 6 times since being in office.
So help me God.
There has been a giant backlog in the governor's clemency office.
For months, there have been regular protests outside of the governor's mansion to raise awareness about the lack of action on clemency petitions.
There are a lot of innocent men and women in our state who have spent decades in prison and still haven't gotten access to the compensation to which they're due.
But Allen may not have to wait for the governor. Representative Pricey Harrison is sponsoring a bill where exonerees could get a hearing in front of a superior court judge to determine innocence.
It's frustrating to see these folks suffer because even if you get an expunction, it's still difficult to turn your life around.
I feel like nobody wants to deal with the truth.
Essentially homeless because people still won't hire him, Allen continues to fight for his future while remembering his past.
It's going to take everything that it took me to remain sane while I was in prison.
Now, Allen recently had a courtroom victory in his fight for justice. The U.S. Court of Appeals reinstated his federal civil lawsuit against FBI agent Jennifer Elwell for her reporting on blood evidence in his case. Deborah.
What a story. Cullen Browder, thank you.
EPA Administrator Michael Regan was in Raleigh today to announce a new federal plan to combat contamination by what's known as PFAS or forever chemicals. Regan served as North Carolina's environmental secretary during the Gen X crisis, one of the nation's first high-profile cases of this type of contamination. He said the EPA will soon set safety standards for the compounds, which do not break down easily in the environment or in a person's body. And companies that make the chemicals will be required to give the EPA much more information about them. Now let's take a look at one of the live cameras from the WREL booth at the State Fair this evening. What a glorious day at the fair. Attendance back up this weekend, Mike, and I can sure see why.
Oh, yeah. The weather yesterday was amazing. 66 was the high. 71 today. The sun is setting, so we've cooled down. 68, the dew point at 40. And since the air is so dry, we're going to be rather chilly again tonight. Not so much right now, but over the next few hours, those numbers will steadily come down. It's 72 at Fayetteville, 68 Rocky Mount, 64 right now in Roxborough. An hour by hour, by midnight, we're at 54. And tomorrow morning, 45. We awoke to 42 this morning, but some locations were in the upper 30s, and some locations tonight could be in the upper 30s as well, especially in some of the more cooler rural areas. And you know where they are because you often have cooler temperatures in the Sand Hills and up toward Roxborough than we here have here in the Triangle. So high pressure rules. And sitting to the south and west, we have still a northerly flow bringing in that cooler, drier air, but that will cease during the day tomorrow because high pressure will sit to our south. So by the end of the day, we have a southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. So we go from 71 today to about 76 tomorrow. So our normal high is about 72. So tomorrow we're back to above normal temperatures. The next front is off to the west, moving into the Plain States. By the time we get to Wednesday, that front makes its way into the mid-Mississippi Valley. We have a stronger southwesterly wind on Wednesday. 79 is the high. Now, I have 79 for Wednesday and Thursday, but I'm seeing signs in the atmosphere that we could at least get up to 80 degrees here in the Triangle, maybe lower 80s in Fayetteville, but I've kept the warming to 79 for both days. Check in tomorrow. Those numbers may go up. And then there's the first of two fronts that comes in that brings changes for our weekend and early next week. The first front on Friday brings some showers and storms. Now, it's not likely now to bring definitive cooling. What it will do is bring in drier air. So it's possible dew points on Friday could go into the 60s. And then once the front passes, dew points over the weekend go back into the 50s. But there really isn't cooling now with the first front. Highs will probably stay in the 70s for Saturday and Sunday. The second front starts to approach the area Sunday night, and that's where it lies Sunday night. That green indicates a chance for some showers, and then on Monday, the front will be to our south. The cooler air comes in, although the latest European model I've seen holds the cooling off till next Tuesday. We're still indicating perhaps some highs in the 60s on Monday. So very quiet weather this week with warming temperatures at least through Friday. 40 for the low tonight in Roxborough, 45 in Raleigh, 44 Fayetteville, 42 in Goldsboro. And then tomorrow we're going to keep the sunshine like we had today. The humidity is still low. Dew points will be in the low 40s, but it does warm up. 78 Fayetteville, 75 at Roxborough, 75 at Rocky Mount. Now for your 7-day forecast, notice a few things. Those morning lows begin to go up. By Wednesday morning, it's 48. Thursday morning is 50. Friday morning, 58. 54 for Saturday morning. Those afternoon highs, again, 79 for the high on Wednesday, 79 Thursday. Friday is a transition day. Some showers and storms. Right now, we're going to go about a 30% chance, but that number could go up. The front swings on by. It's still warm this weekend, but the humidity goes down. That Sunday night front goes on by. Small chance for rain. And Deb, there could be some cooler weather by next Monday back into the 60s. But overall, the 7-day does not look all that bad.
Pretty nice. That low humidity really says it all.
Sure does.
Thanks, Mike. Casey Hintz is here now. And boy, you know, those first polls of the season really don't mean much, but they also mean a real lot, don't they?
They don't mean anything, that's right. But it's good, you know, to get some little bit of notice going on here. Now, it might be a year of transition for Duke and North Carolina men's basketball, but hey, those polls still say they're among some of the best in the nation. Plus, we're 6 weeks into the season, but we'll hear how NC State's loss in week two may have contributed to some recent success. All eyes will be on Duke basketball and Mike Krzyzewski's last ride this season. And while Coach K has dismissed the focus of hanging just one more banner, well, the Associated Press thinks the Blue Devils could certainly have that chance. For the 14th consecutive season, Duke debuts in the top 10, checking in at number 9. Coach K's group will face two top 10 teams in the opening weeks, facing number 10 Kentucky and number 1 Gonzaga. Meanwhile, North Carolina will usher in the Hubert Davis era, ranked 19th in the AP preseason poll, along with a solid cast of returners. UNC brought in five new faces, including three veteran transfers who bring a lot of size and skill. This is the 16th consecutive season the Tar Heels are ranked in the preseason poll. Other ACC teams in the top 25, Florida State at number 20 and Virginia at number 25. Well, sticking with the Tar Heels, UNC wide receiver Choffrey Brown has entered the transfer portal, yes, in the middle of the season. The speedy redshirt sophomore has just one reception through seven games, but did not play in Saturday's 45-42 win over Miami. Now, in a post on Twitter today, Brown thanked the university for the opportunity, but says he feels like it's best to find a new situation. Brown is the younger brother of former Heels star wideout De'Ami Brown. Well, Saturday night's 33-7 win at Boston College was impressive on many different levels for NC State, but ultimately it moved the Pack to 2-0 in ACC play, 5-1 on the season, and up four spots to number 18 in this week's AP poll. But it's that lone loss in Starkville that head coach Dave Doran says might just be the lesson this team needed.
It was a great teachable moment. I thought our guys took it to heart. They owned it. As coaches, we learned a lot, you know, with our guys in that, and we got better from it. So not that I ever want to lose a game, but I'm thankful we lost that game the way we did that early in the season, because it has helped us.
And coming up tonight at 10 and 11, day after reactions from the Carolina Panthers, 34-28 overtime loss to Minnesota. Still looking for an identity on offense. We'll hear head coach Matt Rhule and how he says it's going to look vastly different. But for starters, Sam Darnold has to play better. I don't know how vastly different it could be, of course, with Christian McCaffrey still out, but right. He says they're going to run it more.
Oh, so. Such a tough loss yesterday, too. Yeah,
three thank in a row. Unbelievable.
Oh, it's been tough. Thanks, Casey. And thank you for joining us. Coming up, NBC Nightly News takes us inside the school lunch shortages hitting districts nationwide.
And Congressman David Price may have announced his retirement, yet he still has a lot of work to do. Hear what he wants to accomplish in his last 15 months in office when you join us tonight on WREO News at 7. We'll see you then.